Good morning, everyone. Everyone awake and ready? Everyone awake and ready? Great. It's wonderful to be here and to feel all the joy and the smiling faces. Let us pray, O Heavenly Father, Divine Mother,
Beloved Jesus Christ,
Blessed Master,
dearest Mother,
saints and sages of all religions, I bow to all of you. Free my life from all obstacles, and give me physical, mental, and spiritual development.
Make my mind thy temple.
Make my heart thy altar.
Make my love thy home.
Be thou the only King,
reigning on the throne of my consciousness.
To read to you from the Cross and Lotus Journal from this last September. Talk by Mother Hamilton on Beyond Religion, Reconciling God and Man. I am the way, the light, the way, the truth. Nobody can go to the Father except through me, said the Christ. And it says here, and he is the head of the body, this body, which is the church. And as he said, the temple of the living God, who is the beginning, the firstborn from the dead, that in all things he might have preeminence. Now you notice that it says here that he is the firstborn from the dead. And that means that man in his human state cannot realize his oneness with God. He is too involved with the things of the senses. He is too involved with all of his desire nature. I want this, I want that, give me something else. Lord, please take away this illness, please take away this trouble. Everything in the world you are thinking about is in the sense of duality, and your full attention is not upon the one who has all the answers, all the help, all of the prosperity, all of your love, all of your forgiveness, all of everything. And he is to be found, as the Christ says, only within yourselves. Ye are the temple of the living God. No man has seen God at any time. So it is only when man has given up his humanhood and has gone through the crucifixion on his own cross that he has gone into the depth of the hell of his own being, that which he has created, and gone through the experiences which are necessary. Then, after the third day, or having gone through the experience of having consciousness released from the three bodily jars, first the physical, because that was the form last, then the light body, which controls all of the energy in your body, the nerves and whatnot, and then the first cause, which is the idea body. The consciousness must be released from all of it. You must die. You must descend into hell. Then you must rise from the dead. And it says, and having made peace through the blood of his cross, not on, but of, by him to reconcile all things unto himself, by him I say, whether they be things on earth or things in heaven. So man must go through this tremendous experience, and it is not an easy experience. But if Christ went through it, then why not we follow his example? We say how much we love God the Father. We say how much we love Jesus the Christ. Yet, is anyone willing to pick up his cross, which is his body, and follow him and emulate him in every detail? He was no namby-pamby. He was no Casper Milquetoast, as he's sometimes pictured. He was a man who had strength and power beyond anyone's belief. Why? Because he had come to serve God in man. He had come to establish a new order. He had come to show man what he was like inside and what must be done. And he showed us the way in every way. And yet, it has been misinterpreted. The parables are not understood, the truth behind the parables. In the beginning, man must goes to whatever individual, whatever church that his consciousness is able to receive. And it is good that he has put his foot upon the path, very good. But in order to progress, you must take the first step from where you are. You must keep climbing the ladder. And finally, you get your God realization. So you go from religion to religion, from church to church, from individual teacher to individual teacher, until at last you realize that you have not really found the truth in all that has been given to you, because it is given to you as being historical. It is not being given to you as the living truth of that which happens within every man when he is ready to receive it. It is not given to you to know that you must be still and know that I am God, as it says in the 46th Psalm, that you must go into the Holy of Holies, that inner sanctuary of your own soul. You must close the doors of the senses, forget all the things of time and space, the Word and the atom, which are the four beasts before the throne, and fix your full attention upon Him. If you will do that, all of your troubles will disappear. You will not be gravitating between, shall I do this, shall I do that, shall I do something else? And your ego is at play because what you're doing is to find out what is the best thing to enhance what you, the human self, wants to do, the human ego. And you're not looking inside to find out what God, through Christ, wants you to do. You have to listen. You have to go into the stillness of your own being. And you have to listen. I keep emphasizing this, listen for God. There's a great deal of difference between prayer and contemplation, because we're always praying to God for something, and very seldom, if ever, for the realization of our oneness with Him. But when you are meditating through contemplating God alone, then He listens to you. He lifts you up into His arms, and He tells you, He whispers in your ear the wonderful truths. He gives you revelations of truth behind the parables. He puts you through what is necessary. He is sorry to have you to suffer, because He is a God of love. But you have brought that suffering upon yourself. And just as you go through pain when you give birth to a child, so also you go through pain when you give birth to the Christ within yourself. And the transformation takes place from human to the divine. So then you too can become an heir with Christ. You too can become a master. You do not supersede or supplant anyone else. It means that you have become a master of yourself. I call the great spiritual teacher that I studied with master. He was not my personal possession, my master in that sense. But I call him master because he has gone through what was necessary to find his union with God. And from this great man of India, I heard the truth of the Christ, as I had never heard it in any Orthodox church at all. For the first time, I knew that heaven, hell, and purgatory were not something outside of myself, but they were inside of myself, inside. That God was inside, that Christ was inside, that I didn't have to wait until I died a physical death in order to find Him, to go to heaven, hell, or purgatory. Very few would go to heaven in the first place. Some might reach purgatory if they were particularly angelic, but most of us would be in the hot place. And that is totally what we have to look forward to from the dogmatic teachings that are given to us. We make our own heaven and hell, because if heaven is within us, so also is hell, or the place of darkness. But I listened to the injunction of this great master, and I went within myself, and he taught me how to do it. He taught me the true meaning of the parables. And my love for God in this man was so great because he had finally taken me out of the darkness into the light, that I was willing to do whatever he asked me to do, whatever was necessary, in order to attain that tremendous goal, which he had set out before me, union with God the Father. Remember that the Christ said, I of myself am nothing. It is my Father who doeth the works. So he came to lead us not to himself, but through the example of truth, which he set before us to the infinite Father, who is the Father of us all. Isn't this wonderful? You know, I can read all of the same words in the scriptures that any traditional Orthodox person might read, and I find such profound truth, I find such inspiration. And yet, the way that I understand it through Yogananda's and through Mother's teachings is so different than what we get in traditional churches. Now, you could go to any church, any synagogue, any temple, anywhere in this world where they are worshiping God and striving for realization. And you will find at least a few people within that congregation who are really lit up. They have a special light on their face. They have a sparkle in their eyes. They have a love for God and they're alive to it. These are not any longer just dead words or something that you have to wait for until you die. I remember when I was young, I asked my mother whether I would get all the candy that I wanted when I was in heaven. My mother, being a very sweet soul, said, yes, dear, I suppose so. And we imagine heaven to be an extension of this earth, except just a nicer place. People are nicer to each other. The people who are mean to each other, they go someplace else. And that it's lovely and that it's always the right temperature, I suppose, and so on. And really, what we're imagining, I think, is what Sri Yukteswar describes as the astral worlds, which is this realm above the earthly realm that is perfectly beautiful. And yet, even there, we are told, that is not the place of perfect realization. If you have not attained a perfected consciousness within this realm, within this world, why would you automatically expect it to be someplace else? Why would you think suddenly everything that is negative, everything that is problematic would suddenly drop from you, and you would have that perfect apprehension of the light and love and forgiveness? Is this not the proving ground? Is this not the place right here and right now where we must live the life? Not to some other distant time, some other distant place. This notion that Jesus came to be the way, that the way that he lived his life, the things that he did, it's not that we have to go, of course, and live in Israel or Jerusalem or Bethlehem, not in that kind of physical way. But the way that he conducted his life, the way that he went inside up into the mountaintop, as it is oftentimes described, which is really going up into the upper regions of your own consciousness. Now, the spine represents both north and south, up and down. And when we concentrate on the lower centers within the spine, it brings us down into body consciousness, into sense consciousness. And we just get relegated into that realm. And this is the hellish existence that is always alternating pleasure and pain. But why is it hellish? Why does Buddha call it the place of suffering? It is because we are in separation from our true self, from our heavenly home, from who we truly are. We sense it. We know it. We know that there's something more. There's something greater. That's why we're here. That's why we're aspiring to be on this path, because we've heard that calling. We've heard that plea to rise up above the things of the world and to go into divine consciousness. When I first put my feet on the path, I did it, you might say, unknowingly. It felt like the shepherd himself had the crook of his stick, his walking stick, and he grabbed me by the throat and was pulling me in a direction. And I wasn't sure that I wanted to go. I just wanted a normal life. And yet I couldn't find anything in this life that was satisfactory. It was a spiritual crisis, but I didn't have the words for it. I didn't have any teachings around it, so I didn't understand it. Only that what I found around me was dissatisfying, that I knew that there must be something more, something greater. I didn't know what that greater was. I just only knew that it must exist. And why would we have the notion at all that there is anything greater? Why would we not just look around this world and just sigh and, just say, okay, I guess that's just the way that it is. And some people do. Some people do. But I remember working with one particular person when I was working with people who had fairly extreme disorders mentally in my role as a counselor. And this woman had a true multiple personality. And she remembered that when she's putting through tortured experiences as a young girl, that she would look into a light bulb and she would just project her mind into that light bulb. And it was light there and it was so warm and so wonderful. And she could dissociate herself from the experiences that her father, who is not at all what he should have been, was putting her through. And so she learned to dissociate from the world and from different parts of herself. But she always strove and worked to becoming one whole, complete person. Now, what was it inside of her? Even as a little girl, she knew that that must be true. And yet, all of her worldly experience told her this is normal. This tortured experience is what is normal. Why would she not accept that? Why would she strive for healing? Why would she strive for wholeness? There's nothing in her experience that made her think that that was even possible. And yet she did. And yet we all do to some extent. Now some are more conscious in their journey, some are more unconscious. And really in all the ways that we try to achieve wholeness, it is that unconscious or conscious calling to a greater life, to a higher life, to a life of God realization where we realize our oneness with the infinite, with the divine. And it's very interesting, sometimes we just don't question why it is that we have that impulse, why it is that we have that belief. And it is because we have experienced it before. We came out of that heavenly consciousness. It was part and parcel of our nature. We chose to come into this world, and we chose to have these world experiences. We chose to separate ourselves from the divine because we wanted to have this experience in this realm of separation. And God created it all, and he said, all right, this is your playground. Go out and do what you wish. But when you are done, when you are ready, you can turn your attention within. I will send you a teacher. I will send you somebody to remind you of the truth that you have always known, to remind you of that being whom you have always been, only you have deeply, deeply forgotten it. You have become attached to the things of this world. You have come to believe that you are this body. You have come to believe that you are a particular profession or you belong to a particular family. And in as much as we are attached to those beliefs, it keeps us from knowing who and what we truly are. It's the most fantastic revelation that we could know our oneness with the infinite divine, that lies as a potential a seed deeply hidden within us. And for many of us who are following this path, it still remains a revelation yet unrealized. We haven't truly known it. We may have gotten tastes of it. We may have gotten little glimpses of it. But it's like we're on the outside of the big picture plate window watching a family on the inside who's having their Thanksgiving dinner, and there's laughter, and there's joy, and we're standing out in the snow, out in the cold. Somehow we don't enter in. Somehow we don't enjoy the bliss, the upliftment, the transformation that must come. Now, life puts us into a series of crises. I was describing to you my own crisis when I was a late teenager and how that put me onto the path. I was talking to somebody the other day, and this whole notion was given so visibly and clearly in my mind, I thought I would describe to you what I wrote about it. and it's entitled Vision Quest. In many American Native cultures, the tradition is for a young man to set out on a vision quest. He removes himself from the tribe. He will fast and pray and vow not to return until he's been vouchsafed a personal, mystical revelation about his life and his relationship with the spiritual world. This vision quest marks the death of childhood, or the old life, and a birth into a greater life. It is considered so important to be profoundly changed by this experience that to return from the vision quest without transformation is not acceptable. It is better to die. We, too, have such transitional times in our lives. However, we are oftentimes not guided to take it seriously, nor do we use this time to deeply connect with Spirit. This lack of fully engaging in transitions can be the reason why in modern culture there is such psychological and spiritual difficulty in teenage years. However, I do not think this necessity of finding your place in the world and your relationship with the Creator happens only at the time of entering manhood or womanhood. We have several such transitions of births and deaths during a single lifetime. At various stages in life, we may have to reboot our system by undertaking an internal vision quest. Some typical times may occur when we are deciding on education or career goals, during what is called a midlife crisis, or at the time of entering retirement. Earlier this year, this body turned 60. In India, so I was told, when entering your 60th year, your astrological stars align in such a way that it is considered a time of being born again, beginning a new life. For me, while entering this year of transition, I had the idea that my life might end. My param guru, Paramahansa Yogananda, had lived to 59 and a half, and somehow it felt that my life could be at a close as well. I did not feel disturbed by this thought, only that others would need to complete the work that God had inspired me to start. However, even though it definitely felt this life could end, I also knew that it could portend another kind of death, a death in consciousness of the way that I had been serving and being in this world. I am well into my 60th year now, and I have strongly felt that the impending death is not the death of the body, but a transitional ending, the passing of the old and the birth of a renewed vision. There have been many changes that have occurred outwardly in my life. My mother and only surviving parent has left her body. I have moved to a new home. My brothers are retiring. Yet with all these eventful changes, the most powerful ones are occurring within. In speaking to an aspirant lately, God showed me that her need was for a renewed vision in her life, to be on a vision quest. I spoke to her about our need for recognizing transitions and a renewed vision in life. The need was crystal clear as we talked. And to not see this need or recognize it when it comes brings us peril. There are times when a midlife crisis can tempt a married man or woman to have an affair outside the marriage, or feel compelled to do something to feel young, or to be depressed and dissatisfied with life in general. These are desires and moods that can blind us to the need for an internal renewal. When life becomes a doldrum, when you feel dead to your current life, or there is something unbearable about your existence, can you not hear the distant drums of the Great Spirit calling to you for a fresh vision quest in your life? To honor the transitions in your life, to acknowledge there is a time to die to your old self and find renewal is to keep in step with divine purpose. What fits at one point in your life will feel like a straitjacket at another. Many times people imagine these changes require radical outside change, changing professions, moving to a new area, or perhaps to divorce. However, there are those who do act impulsively, enacting a radical outer change, but leave the real, harder-to-attain internal renewal untouched. Then there are others who just do nothing. They do not act impulsively, and they do not enter the vision quest, but live, as the novelist wrote, lives of quiet desperation. There may be times when outer changes are part of the internal death and rebirth, such as leaving an occupation, home, etc. However, such outer change is a reflection of the internal transformation and not its essence. It can seem daunting, even frightening, to enter into vision renewal. That is why thinking of an external change only can seem tempting diversion. In order to be really transformed, you must face the unknown, the empty space of a vision that has not yet revealed itself. Before the new life reveals itself, you must leave the old life behind without the clarity or certainty of what the new life will be. Whether you need to physically go somewhere for this vision renewal is part of listening to your inner knowing. Perhaps it is going to a cabin, an ashram, outdoor camping, or to take a retreat in your own home with a do not disturb sign. What is certain is you will need undistracted time to really make this trek of mind and soul by leaving the certain and familiar. It needs to be more than just some time away. You will be entering the jaws of death, letting go of everything you think you know or understand. After this vision quest, it is possible that your outward life may not substantively change. You may live much as you did before, yet you will feel reborn with fresh purpose and inspired with deeper connection to eternal spirit. When the vision quest of your past wears thin, when you no longer find inspiration in what you do, and your focus wanders here and there aimlessly, listen to see if those distant drums are calling you to a vision quest. Consciously marking this death and renewal in life will keep you in step with your true life's purpose. Not to do so is to wither and die on the vine, worthless to yourself and those about you. Continual spiritual renewal and a fresh vision is needed by one and all for a truly fulfilling life. And I think this is absolutely true. Too many times we get onto a track in life and we feel that we, through obligation, just because perhaps we're lazy, we really don't want to do this, we just keep on going on. Perhaps we're in a golden cage where we're being paid enough money and to just keep us going in a certain direction, but there is no aliveness to it. There is a living death instead. What is our purpose? Somebody who's well into her 80s has been speaking recently more and more. I just want to die. I just want to die. Now, her physical health is okay. She has a few problems, but it's not that she's in such pain and misery in that way. She's just lost vision of who and what she really is. She sees herself as this body and she just wants it to be over with, thinking, because she did have the experience when she was giving birth to one of her children where she died and she had a near-death experience. And in that experience, she was lifted up into this heavenly realm and she just wanted to stay there only. But she had a number of children. And she really felt the call of those children that they really needed her and that she needed to return. So this is how she felt. And even though her first preference would have been to stay where she was at, she realized that she must return. And so she did. And suddenly she found herself back on that operating table again. But that vision, that feeling of being lifted up, of being transformed, of being in a completely peaceful, joyful, light-filled realm is still with her. And the association, and as it is with so many people, it is that that is something to attain when we leave this body. But I do believe that Jesus and all the great masters have come to remind us we don't have to die a physical death in order to enter into that realm. The kingdom, he said very clearly, lo, the kingdom of heaven is within you. It is within you. Now, this is a tremendous thing. And that this body, you are the temple of the living God. So if we are find the kingdom of heaven, because he said so clearly, some will say, lo, over here, lo, over there. Don't believe them. I tell you, the kingdom of heaven is within you. You are the temple of God. We hear the words, but we don't really recognize the import of those words. We think, well, that's fine for somebody else. That's fine for a realized master. That's them. That could never be for me. I'm this poor, weak, misunderstood person. I don't believe that I have that within me. And yet, it is. It is. It may be residing in you as a seed, as tiny as the mustard tree, and yet can grow into an enormous tree. Isn't it amazing how these tiny little seeds can grow into such an enormous living organism that has such life and vitality to it? You are exactly the same way. This kingdom of heaven resides in you as a seed. Perhaps it is fully latent. Perhaps it is beginning to shoot out some roots that take you deeper into the soil of realization with limbs that reach up to the light of the divine. It's all happening within you. And once we really grasp this, not just as kind of a faint idea, or maybe that's just for somebody else, but that resides in me, and I can experience it in this lifetime. That becomes a tremendous impetus in order to realize this divine consciousness. Now, why don't we run pell-mell for this goal if it has such great promise? And the reason is we are made up of mixed nature. Some of us wants to go to the kingdom of heaven, and some of us don't. It's like that delightful story that I've told about the little boys. And he's out and he's planting a garden out behind the church. And the minister comes out every once in a while and sees how the progress is going. And finally, the seeds have sprouted and they're coming up and he's getting beans and corn and so many wonderful fruits coming out of it. And so one day the minister comes out and the boy is so proud of what he's done here. And the minister says, my, he says, what a nice thing that you and God have done. And the little boy wasn't so sure he wanted to share the credit there, you know, because he put a lot of work into this. And he said, well, you should have seen this field when just God had it. So we're made up of mixed nature. We're not sure that we want to give ourselves completely. You know, who will get the credit? Who will get the credit? Swami Satchidananda had a wonderful saying. He said that who is to blame is not important. Only how shall we set the situation right? Who is to blame is not important. Only how shall we set the situation right? And so this issue of pride, this issue of which feeling ashamed is also just the flip side of feeling prideful. If we didn't feel prideful, we wouldn't feel shame. If we didn't feel shame, we wouldn't feel prideful. They go hand in hand. And so Ramakrishna was talking about the people who feel very proud of their wealth. And he said, what is it to have wealth? Because somebody else will always have more wealth than you do. And some other people will have less wealth than you do. He said, just think, at dusk time, the glowworm comes out, and he thinks he's providing light for the whole world. And then it gets a little darker, and suddenly the stars come out and puts the glowworm to shame. Oh, my goodness, look at that greater light up there. The stars are very proud of their ability to shine until the moon comes up. And then the moon comes up, and oh, my gosh, the stars just fade into non-existence, and only the moon is there. And the moon's so proud of what it's doing until the sun comes up. And then the sun starts to make the horizon red, and then it bursts upon the scene, and suddenly you can't even see the moon anymore. He says it's like that. He says if wealthy people could view their wealth like that, he said then they would have no pride and they'd be all right. So you always think, all right, what is it to have this life? What is it to do a few things? I remember when I was doing some acts of service and it seemed to me that it wasn't getting recognized at all. nobody was paying much attention. And I was feeling a little bit sorry for myself because I was doing all of these things and nobody seemed to care or pay any attention, no acknowledgement. And then the thought came to me, God has been giving to me and to all humanity all of these millennia. Earth, all the fruits of earth, constantly life is springing forward, new delights are coming, and who gives thanks to the Creator? We just go about, we're so prideful of what we do, what we've accomplished, what I've learned. And who turns around and gives thanks to the Creator? And if God can serve like that and not have no never mind about who gives thanks or not, just continues to serve. Why? Because it's His nature. Just like the rose, its nature is to, for those that it's not been bred out of them, for them to smell, for them to look beautiful. They don't do it for the passerby. They do it because it's their nature to do it, whether anybody else is around or not. When you do acts of service, because it's your nature, it's your joy, it's your fulfillment to be able to do that. And whether anybody else recognizes it, appreciates it, or anything else, you know it. And as a result of that, the fulfillment is in the doing. Not in the desserts, not in what you get as a result. This is so important in declaring our own freedom from this world. Because as long as we're looking to this world to give us acknowledgement, to give us praise, to give us anything, because if we're looking for praise, we'll also be equally attuned to shame and feeling bad. They just go hand in hand. They just do. And to free ourselves is to do what we do because it's our nature to do. When we're attuning ourselves to the infinite divine within and we feel that bliss, we feel that love, we feel that spirit of service going out, our service isn't a sacrifice in the sense that we are doing something and not getting anything out of it. In fact, we're getting knocked for it. We're getting joy out of it. The joy of being in complete union with God. And as a result of that, we're freed. Then if anyone else recognizes, feels joy or appreciation at what we do, it just adds joy to our joy. But we don't need it in order to feel complete. This is a complete reorientation to our life. So we need to take a check. And one of the checks that we can take in is, do I feel joy in what I'm doing for the sake of doing it? This is what I have come to do. It's fulfilling what God has given me to do. And I do it in that spirit and with that feeling. And I feel whole and complete within that. And I would do it whether anybody else was around or not, because it is my fulfillment to do it. I must do it. It is my nature to do it. Then there is no ego that is angling for any kind of attention or anything else. It gives us absolute and total freedom in this life. This is a wonderful, wonderful thing. And we are meant to live in that kind of freedom. Imagine living a life in which you feel a continual flow of bliss, a continual flow of connection with the Heavenly Father, Divine Mother. And to have that always, would that not be heaven on earth? In the lost gospel of St. Thomas, Jesus said, "Lo, the kingdom of heaven is spread all over this earth. But who have the eyes to see it and the ears to hear it?" Isn't that marvelous? And when we attune to this inner joy, suddenly we begin to see that it is God who is manifest. First, perhaps it's easiest to see through nature. We see it in the trees. We see it in the sun. We see it in flowers. We just see that this is life and the beauty of life issuing forth out of the earth. And then perhaps when we see a baby and our hearts just open up, and that little child just so innocent, so fresh from the heavenly realms. And we just, our hearts are just open, and we feel that upliftment. And then gradually our circle of love begins to expand. And we begin to see it in more and more people, in more and more situations. So that's another check that you can make each day. Has my circle of love expanded today? Because if it has, I'm growing in spirit. Have I incorporated the stranger? Have I incorporated those who are close to me? Sometimes the hardest people to love are the ones who are closest to us. We're most likely to find fault with them. And we can speak to somebody who's closest to us in a way we would never speak to a stranger or even a friend. Isn't that sad? We take liberties. We're over-familiar. To take that step back and hold that sacred ground between you and someone else. Now, you could imagine in your minds that if you do that, well, wouldn't that be cold and aloof? And it's not at all. What we discover in that sacred ground is that there is a deep, deep connection that goes beyond likes and dislikes, just the things of the moment, and brings us into eternal relationship with that soul. And it is loving, it is blissful, it is uplifting. Now, we still can interact on a person-to-person basis, but we never lose that sense of the sacred between us. And just think, if all of the world, suddenly every individual was seeking to serve God and everyone else, they held that sacred ground between themselves and another, their circle of love was growing. Just think of what this world could become. Just think of what this world. And is it that far away, really? It can seem so at times, I know. But is it so far away? And so we first enact it within ourselves. We are the example. And we must be the example. We do it independent of what this world does. Why? Because it is your nature, your divine nature to do so. Not because people give you pats on the head or recognize what you're doing or acknowledge you in any way. In fact, as we know from the lives of many great masters, Jesus included, the world doesn't always look kindly on somebody who's doing this. And so we may have the opposite effect of what we would like as a human being, and yet we do it because it is our divine nature to do it. And we grow in that. And we become that. We come to the point where we can't even remember living in this life as separation. And now it's ours, continuously, wholly, completely. We live in that bliss. We live in that freedom. We live in that light. And whatever God calls us to do is just fine with us because that's our divine nature expressing itself even as the flower, the tree, all expresses itself. So let us seek to attune. And if we find ourselves out of sync with our life, dead to our life, out of step with truth and the bliss and joy of being, let us take that as a clarion call. Stop. Organize some time to really stop. Go within that vision quest. Find that refreshed version of life that will inspire you to take you into the next stage. And when you fulfill that, you will perhaps enter into another vision quest that will take you into the next stage, and so on and so on, because you don't stop growing. When you come into your oneness with God, growth continues. Isn't that an amazing concept? You continue to love, you continue to serve, you continue to grow, because God is infinite. As long as we inhabit any form, which implies limitation, we will always be growing in spirit. And that's a wonderful thought, I think, because it makes us alive. It makes us alive. So set out fresh today on your vision quest. Tap in deeply to those roots of inspiration and really bring your whole sense of self into your life. Because if not now, then when? When? Today is the day. Now is the time. So I pray that the blessings of masters, the great masters, and the infinite spirit be with you, surrounding you in that light, that inspiration, that love, and that you may go off and awaken that in all others until this entire world is singing in unison and harmony. Now, if you will pray with me, O Heavenly Father, Divine Mother, I feel the wonder and the beauty of Thy glorious presence in every part of my being. My heart is bursting with my love for Thee. I kneel in adoration at Thy feet and surrender myself to Thee. I feel the power of Thy perfection surging in every cell of my body. My mind and my intelligence are radiant with Thy healing light. My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss of my communion with Thee. I and my Father are one. Blessed Spirit, I am He. Thank you for coming today. Pronouns, I bow to the light that is within you.